upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
All right, we are here. We are here. So, Fallen Shinigami, how was your day, man?
Buckle up, boys and girls. In order to talk about my day, I gotta talk about my weekend. So it's time for the first installment of the Fallen Shinigami Chronicles. So this weekend I went to Atlanta. I went to represent for my little sister. She got her master's degree. So we rocking. All my siblings now have secondary degrees, so turning up in that household. So that's just flex for the family, just like support for parents and everyone that kind of just like helped us get to this point. So happy for them, happy for her as well. So that was the cool part of the weekend. Now for the tiring part, hit the danger button. So, my friend, I woke up at least 4:30 twice in a row already this weekend. And so with that, graduations, I have to say, graduations are some of the most fun events and celebratory events that a lot of people get to participate in. The actual graduation ceremony is one of the most boring ceremonies in the history of existence. My God. And it's bad because I went to a hooding ceremony and then I went to like the actual school ceremony. The hooding ceremony was 2 hours. The school ceremony was 4 hours.
Huh?
Damn. Four hours. And my goodness, I had to wake up super early to get there because it started at 8 a.m. But guess what? They didn't start walking down the aisle until 8:20. They didn't get done until like 8:50. They didn't start the ceremony until 9. My friend, from there, they proceeded to talk and do essentially an award ceremony for the teachers and staff for 2.5 hours. They didn't even mention any of the graduates. And then the president of school, who was talking his heart out, had the nerve to be like, hey, this is all going to go smoothly if none of you like stand up and like chant and yell for your graduates or whatever. At the 2.5 hour mark, the crowd was about to crucify this man. There's about to be a revolt. My goodness, man. I never again, like, I can't do a 4 hour graduation again. And now that I transitioned to that, as for this morning, last night, I have a policy where I don't really try to eat a lot but the night before a flight. So last night I had the smart idea where, I'm going to get a milkshake from McDonald's. So I got a strawberry milkshake around 8:30. So woke up this morning and then the first thing I heard was, ha, 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 ha. And I was like, oh, no, that's not good. I would go to sleep. And then when I wake up, hopefully I can take care of my business and I'll be good. Woke up, took care of my business, and then it's like, ha, 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 ha. And I was like, oh no, Attack on Titan is playing right now in my stomach. And then as soon as we get in the car, the lyrics came in, and it was like, rumbling, rumbling, la la, rumbling, rumbling. And guess what? The Atlanta airport is one of the worst airports for check-in. I don't know if you've ever been to it. There's only one check-in line. For the Houston airport, which is amazing, you can get through security checkpoint in like 5 minutes. Like when I went to Atlanta, it took me like less than 5 minutes to get through the security checkpoint. Fam, there were five lines that went into the one line that we get for the security check-in. And then we had to walk past those racist police dogs that chased people, the black people in the 60s. And this entire time, my stomach is just playing a symphony because my flight is literally in like 40 minutes and it's a 30 minute wait in the line. So I'm just holding it. But I don't know if I'm gonna miss my flight or if I have the time to go before my flight. But by the grace of God, I got out and then I made my flight. So, and now I'm here recording. So yeah, that was mine. So for any of the 20% of listeners that are still here after that, I'm Demetrius.
And I'm Demetrius.
And Meet presents
The Bird City Podcast.
Yes. So take over for us, Meet.
Okay, so now that I'm still mentally processing everything that's going on here today, I'm just taking over because you kind of went through it. I thought my day was worth. All right, so we're gonna have ourselves a nice, very special episode today where we get to cover a comic book, but this one's very special because it's one that's near and dear to my heart, and I put you on. All right,
you did, and absolutely.
If you see the title of this, you know what it is. It's Bitterroot by my boy Chuck Brown by Image Comics. But before we get to any of that, any of this nice tidbits, let's hit you up with that legal spiegel. So the purpose of this podcast is to explore digital and print media. All sources we reference are owned by their respective companies, and our thoughts and opinions are strictly our own and reflect no biases or corporate agendas. Your discretion is advised.
And yeah, just for the listeners, this is going to be a really big, just like content heavy episode. So there's going to get some like deep topics. Both of us are going to kind of just like go in, touch the comics, like even to just kind of, I won't set it up yet, but you, like you mentioned, put me onto it with it, literally like our first episode of when we did the podcast. So getting a chance to actually read this for the first time was really eye-opening for me.
Yeah, definitely. It was that for me too. And of course, you know, I got put on by Blur Without Fear. So that was definitely just one for me. But hey, before we get to that discussion, before we get to talk about everything, you know, we got to do this every time. Let's hit you up with that what's hot. Now, let's see what's hot. What's new in the indie streets these days besides you nearly dying?
Yes, I have to say, I have to give an apology to the Fast and Furious franchise. I went to go see that with my older sister, Maya Nechon, yesterday. It was really good. Fast X was really good. And she hadn't seen any of the movies before. I mean, well, any of the movies after the Tokyo Drift. And so I just kind of like updated her beforehand. And I, like when I watched F9, it was like the Rise of the Skywalker to me, where I was just like, come on, what are we doing here? But Fast X is such an entertaining movie, and Jason Momoa just like has the time of his life in that movie, and you can tell he's an absolute man child. But it was really good. My only concern moving forward is that it was supposed to be a two-parter, and as the moment they released it, they were like, oh, we're actually going to make it a three-parter. So I think with the Fast and Furious franchise, it is the Attack on Titan as stretch it out of it, where it's like at some point you need to learn how to end it. But in terms of Fast X, it was a really good movie. Go see that. Other things that's what hot, just to keep it quick, we also have La Reina del Sur season 3, Queen of the South, one of my favorite telenovelas, and one of my friends, that's kind of like how we became best friends because of that show. We're already going crazy in the chat with that. Another one, I finished Beef. That show is crazy.
What did I tell you? Revenge should never cost more than $275.
You absolutely told me. So that was absolutely incredible. And then another thing, if you're in Houston this weekend, Comic Palooza, come holler at your boys. the Rogue Jedi will be giving a performance, and that's going to be dope. So I'm looking forward to that. That's all I got.
All right. And then from my end, we know you got to get through the categories. So anime, of course, we got ourselves that Young Villain Saga. We got that crisply animated Demon Slayer just out of nowhere, just cooking. And One Piece is cooking too. Everybody cooking in the anime scene right now. I'm not even gonna hold you. Then we're gonna speed pass along. Of course, we got in the comics book sphere, the Summer Symbiotes fully on underway. The Extreme Venom Versus here, and tying into the death of the Venomverse. Also in anticipation of it, I seen this thing on TikTok one day. It's actually about the Miles Morales, so about, you know, across the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. And the TikTok was like, wait, hold on, who's that in the background chasing Miles? And it's Insomniac PS4 Spider. Is like, and then he's just like, where's the X and the O book? I was like, you just see the X and the O right on top of Miles, like, this brother ain't gonna make it.
That's wild. Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, but yeah, so other than that, just little quick tidbits of just different things that's been happening. We got ourselves like more movies that are coming out as well as coming out, and it's too many to mention, but just know that you'll be hearing our thoughts about it in upcoming episodes. And then of course Comic Palooza, which as he mentioned, I'll be performing in. And hey, come see your boy fully kitted out.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
As the Rogue Jedi really should.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much all I had in terms of the TV and movie scene.
So we can get into Bitterroot then.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk about it. Let's talk about greatness, shall we? We're going to start off our discussion by talking about Bitterroot and what the overview story is. So Bitterroot, written by Chuck Brown, right? With art by Rico Renzi and Sanford Green. Not that Sanford Green. but in terms of the story, it's pretty much taking place in 1920s era Harlem. And it's about a certain family, the Sanguier family. I call them Sanguier. I could very well be doing that all types of wrong, but
I was calling them Sangre, and I was like, I feel like that's not it.
But don't worry, we gonna figure it out at some point. Because this comic is, spoiler alert, gonna get adapted into a series by Regina King.
Literally just saw that today.
So, I was gonna say Regina King, she an absolute queen.
Yes,
and her wanting to adapt this, it's about to be just straight heat. But yeah, so essentially, it's all about the Sanguier family, and they're basically two sects. There are the basically the fighters or the hunters, and then there are the root magicians. They essentially like help take care of the root and like create all the medicine need to fight their opponents. Their opponents, or the ops of the series, are known as the Jinnu. The Jinnu, as they call them, because other different families, they also are hunters and they call them by different names. They're essentially beings or monsters created through the power of hatred, ignorance, and bigotry. And whenever somebody feels those emotions really heavily, boom, transform into a near mindless demonic monster, and to run roughshod on the entire Black community. So with that, you can kind of have two guesses as to who typically gets transformed into Jinnu.
I just remember you when you kind of set it up talking to me about it, where you said like the concept, as you mentioned, where it's like the hatred, it corrupts souls and kind of like turns them into a monsters. And then you said, oh, it takes place in the 1920s. And I was like, ooh, I know that. Like, that's definitely going to touch on it. It won't like run away from things that we're going to get into much later. So definitely, like, if one is to like check that out, definitely have your eyes open coming into it. That's all I can say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So as we get started, we encounter, like, you know, just get into the world building, get into everything. And we encounter, like, our main characters. We have ourselves Cullen, who is a, well, he's a male. So, like, in terms of dynamics, typically the males are the hunters and the females are the root, And, but unfortunately, Cullen, he doesn't know how to fight. He actually is really good with root work and messing with the roots and creating potions, but they all have him out there fighting. While in the meantime, the second main character, Blink, she is actually more the fighter, and she's good at, like, murdering Jinnu and just putting them in packs. But of course, like, there's Ma Etta, who's the grandmother, the head woman in charge, the elderly one, the one who sticks close to tradition. So she's the one that, like, basically keeps Blink in chains, if you will. Not physical chains, but, you know, the chains of tradition. Say, hey, you stay here and you work on this route while you have your cousin out there doing all the hard work. And of course, Cullen ain't alone out there. We got ourselves the, in my opinion, the best character of this entire crew.
Indubitably.
Yes, yes. Salutations to the one and only Berg. Berg, he a big giant teddy bear. He large, he got a nice beard. And his speech pattern is he speaks with such eloquence and with such large terms that I need to do better.
a voluminous vocabulary, if you will.
Yes, the sharp increase in his vernacular is of such incredible magnitude that one can only hope to imitate such vertitude into our current existence.
Yes.
Oh man, that got me feeling some type of way.
How he talks, people.
Yes, that really is how he talks. He talks with such eloquence that it's a running joke that nobody in his family can understand him because he's using such big-brained words. Because, again, 1920s Harlem. And he's speaking with vocabulary that not many people even today would know.
Boy, that's that GRE grad school test vocab.
Man, that's like a 12th grade spelling bee, you champion of the universe. But moving on, we also got ourselves Enoch, who's kind of like the tech wizard, the tech guru, always doing research. And then there's Ford. Ford is kind of like the outcast cousin. You know, you know that type of cousin. You all know him. But essentially, like, he's outcast for a very specific reason. And he's basically, like, just on the road, just murdering any Jinnu, like, just out there in the entire United States. So
mostly because with that, just to kind of fill it in, I don't know if you want to touch on it later, but mostly because the family believes in purifying the souls with the root, but Ford is like, they just need to be extinguished and killed.
Yes. Yeah, so I was going to get into that because, like, the main plot of that, if you will, is that there were basically a semi-dichotomy between the two, and also trying to, like, you see, like, basically themes of, you know, traditions and trying to bend the norm, because Blink, like, she obviously wants to go out and fight, and fight she does, and she does it super well, while Cullen, like, he does, like, the root work, like, he sometimes does it in her stead, and Ma Etta is not too crazy about that at all, while everybody else is, like, whatever gets the job done, if you...
Yeah.
And then you got ourselves, like, one of the main antagonist that shows up, where you see, like, a giant bird Jinnu, except it starts speaking, like, eloquently. It spoiler alert, it's not a Jinnu, at least in the normal sense, right? And it's the main antagonist is Eliza Nightsdale, who turns into a giant crow monster. Eat your heart out, Itachi. And also there's Walter Sylvester, who's her second in command. Well, who's her equal, kind of. and he also gets be able to turn into a Genu as monster, and all their backstory is just jacked.
And they're both African American, by the way, people.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. When I talk about this, there's only one prominent like white person who has a name in this entire series by the name of Johnny. Johnny, he got invited to the cookout for very good reasons, but
he was at another cookout that was a bit different.
All right, let's just get him out of the way, because his story just does not exist until like a certain point later. Yeah. So essentially, Johnny, he part of a certain white supremacist group, if you will.
One of the biggest ops in history.
You know, a certain group that decides to, you know, wear white hoods and whatnot. And he with his like crew, he with his family and whatnot. And of course, Ford just stumbles up and they all get turned into Genu except for him. And they all just start running roughshod. You know, they all nearly killing this man, Johnny. But Ford like saves him, and like they exist in this purifying. By purifying, I mean absolutely put them in a t-shirt, put them all 6 feet under, and Johnny just realized like, oh, is this what I'm gonna end up turning into? And Ford's like, yeah, so get your act together, boy. And get his act together he did. He basically becomes Ford's like lackey.
Yes, lackey is right.
I was about to say something even crazier. I'm like, wait.
I was trying to filter too.
But yeah, so he pretty much is just there, and essentially he got invited to the cookout. But yeah, you want to take over our antagonist, if you will.
Yeah, so we're not going to go into, just so people have the chance to read the books, we're not going to go into each plot by plot detail, but with that, kind of just like, we see that both Eliza and our guy, Dr. Sylvester, they have a tragic backstory, as Meech mentioned, where they met in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which we're going to touch on a lot later, and the race riots and massacre that happened there. So both of them were found in the rubble. Sylvester, who had already lost his wife prior to sickness, he lost both of his children in that massacre. So with that, we kind of find out that they're not really Genu. That gets touched on in like a later book, so I won't kind of mention it yet, but they can use and harness that power. And with that, they're like, hey, we can get revenge. So that's kind of their plot at the point. And then with that, they see that the Genu that happened in New York. So this also takes place in a lot of different cities and time periods. The cops, they want revenge on the people that got harmed by the Genu. So they just like kind of go into the Harlem black part of it and just start attacking. So then that causes more Genu to come between the cops because their hatred is like manifesting. And so now these Sangres are out trying to like kind of stop them in a sense. So, but also with that, our boy Bird gets infected and he essentially turns into a monster too, but he's able to kind of control himself. And like Meech mentioned, it's with Blank. She wants to fight. And since Cullen at the time is a very poor fighter, she kind of steps in. And Ma Etta, the OG, she's like, oh, I can fight too. Don't get it twisted. So it's kind of just like that combating where it kind of leads to a point where more and more Genu open. And I don't know if this is at the point where the portal tears open or not.
Yep, it is. So essentially a portal tears open, and unfortunately Cullen basically he gets sucked into it. And
I did miss a part. They go and find Uncle Enoch, one of my favorite characters.
Oh yeah, yeah. Enoch just out here wilding out with his crazy inventions, and he's kind of like trying his best, like, all right, here's how we can like fix everybody. Here's how we can fix Berg. Here's how we can like help purify everybody. Here's how we can get rid of Lightendale and Dr. Sylvester, like cure them of their madness and everything. And yeah, no, none of it works.
Yeah, because, and then also why they had to find him, he's also an outcast to the family because they blame him for events that happen, and they keep referring to it as Red Summer of 1919, which is actually a real event that I found out for the first time like last week, and they said that he plays with dark magic, which was like an absolute no-no, and that was kind of the cause of Blink losing her mom, Cullen losing his dad, so him also losing his siblings. So that's kind of why he was in the outcast. So like you mentioned, Cullen gets dragged into the to the netherworld, essentially.
Honestly, I don't even know how to even pronounce this one. How to pronounce that
realm? It's like Barzark or something like that.
Whatever it's called. it's essentially like how it's described. It is basically purgatory. Mm-hmm. And it's the barrier between Earth and Hell. Yes. So it literally becomes like religion. It becomes like demonic, and we get spawny real quick. Mm-hmm. Real quick. And I love it. So essentially, like, as Colin's in there, like in there, he ends up finding like his aunt Nora, who's Blink's mom, and his dad. And of course, like, as we find out, like, time moves differently there. So like they spent years over there when it's like maybe days out there on Earth or something to that effect, because essentially like they're in the portal and they're trying to protect, basically they're killing demons left and right and trying to keep them from coming to Earth.
Yeah,
all being head by an op above all ops. Oh my goodness, that dude's a demon.
Yes,
literally named Adro, ADRO. But then on Earth, we see like, okay, they're still dealing with like Sylvester and Knightsdale, and then another dark portal opens, and then we get our boy Colin just comes through like fully manned out. He murdering things left and right. He got his glow up.
He got the glow up. I wrote that down literally.
He got his glow up and he came out swinging. He laced up his black forces and decided to say, if you an op, you going in the dirt. So yes, he gets like Knightsdale killed. Mm-hmm. And of course, like Sylvester, like he gets away, but of course, like Knightsdale dies. But then the reason why him and Nora get back is twofold. Firstly, it's messed up on Cullen's part, because he ends up actually leaving his dad behind. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, like, his dad was wheelchair bound, even though he's still like able to fight. And then he had like one chance because they figured out that Adro, the king of the demons, is on Earth. Like, he went through that portal. So we gotta like follow him no matter what. Like, we need to do this quickly and get him and put him in a pack. Mm-hmm. But at the cost of his dad being stuck there again for all these time. And he's just like, bro, like, Colin, why you different? your forces is you trying to graduate to Tim's already?
And yeah,
course of the second volume.
Yeah, so they tease that in the second. One thing that we do need to mention is that we find out that what Knightsdale and what Dr. Sylvester are they're not genuine. It's called, this one was really hard to pronounce, but I think it's called Inzondo.
Inzondo.
So instead of it, you turn into a monster because your soul is corrupted by hatred and fear. It's your soul is overcome by such tremendous sorrow, pain, and trauma that you then turn into a monster, which I thought was like an absolutely like incredibly written subplot. And then like how that translates moving into the next volume, where it's just like everyone at different points is just like turning into a monster, and it's kind of like hard to control it. So yeah.
Yeah, so essentially, like, you, like, Ma Etta, like, her main thing is being able to, like, see the souls of others. And Berg, right, because, like, his being able, because they seemingly cure him. Like, he's seemingly able to, like, return back to normal. But then in a fight with a bunch of Genu, he ends up, like, hulking out again. And, like, it turns out, like, hey, I can feel all the guilt, all the fear, and all of the sadness that, like, I felt throughout my entire life and from others as well. And that's how they figure out that, like, oh snap, it is this is completely different. So because, and with that, like, that proves like, okay, all of our stuff just does not work. Like, mm-hmm. Ma Etta trying to figure out like, okay, how do we take care of this? And then Berg's just like, you know what? I'm just conquer all of this. And then there's Cullen, the absolute monstrosity, because she took a look at this man's soul. Ma Etta looked at this man's soul, and he got some demons.
Yeah.
Because of the fact of all the time like he spent in that the B dimension.
Berserker. Yeah.
You know what? I'ma just call it the purgatory.
The Shadow Realm.
The time he spent in the Shadow Realm just pretty much hardened his heart, hardened his soul, and made him like cold, callous, and just pretty much a monster, to where like at one specific point, they all like him, Ford, Berg, and Johnny, and Nora, they all end up at a certain sundown town.
Yeah.
And if you guys don't know your history, what a sundown town is, it was basically a town where in which if you were part of the Black community and you were there, you could not be out, or you could not stay there at sundown. And if you were caught at sundown, they would lynch you. Like the white community, they would just lynch you on sight. So
yeah. And if you want to like an example of that, I believe it's the first episode of Lovecraft Country that kind of highlights the anxiety, stress, and fear that kind of comes from a downtown.
Yeah, it was the first episode.
It's either the first or second.
Yeah, it was one of those two. But yeah, it's pitch perfect. Like that is a perfect example of that, and just trying to like ensure like, hey, our people, we got to be safe. But getting back to the point, they're there. And they're in the sundown town, and then of course, because they in the sundown town, and the sun went down, Jinnu just out the wazoo. Yeah. They all started wilding out, and unfortunately, like Cullen's first instinct was to leave everybody behind. and by this point, right, here's another side plot: is what happens with Sylvester. Learn all about his backstory. We see how Adro is on Earth and actually possessed the dead body of Knightsdale.
Yeah.
Where you go, bro. And then with that, right, she's basically like tempting him, like, hey, here's your destiny, and you get to be reunited with your loved ones, and like you and all of our followers, just give me a bunch of fear. Give me a bunch of hate. Give me a bunch of guilt, and just feed me power through your emotions. And with that, like to increase Adro's power. And Sylvester, like he's just basically he's reliving his trauma over and over. Like he's remembering the Tulsa incident. And he's remembering like losing his wife, losing his children. And then he runs into like another Black family who basically Adro like resurrected their child, but it really wasn't a child anymore, because all that was gone, like their personality was gone. And essentially he just comes to the clues like, this ain't it.
Yeah, it was crazy. I don't know if you've ever seen Midnight Mass.
Yes.
So yeah. So not to spoil people, but go watch Midnight Mass on Netflix. It's incredible. But it's crazy, like how with Adro, how she came to Dr. Sylvester. Even he was saying that, like, yo, this is salvation for us to turn into these Nzondu and like attack and like take over the world. In order to like stop our pain and suffering, we have to end everybody. And with Midnight Mass, it's so crazy, like how that kind of ties in, where it's like one person's vampire is another person's angel. And like with that, it's like a demon and an angel. She promised salvation. But with that, she came to the conclusion where it's like, no, you're actually like evil. Like this isn't right. The fact that you brought back this person's son, he's not there anymore. It's like a husk. So that was absolutely just incredible storytelling, which kind of leads towards when we do get to volume 3 and what we'll talk about later, of just like hatred and like the ramifications of it.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, so essentially like the family, they keep on fighting. Like they're fighting all the Jinnu, they're fighting a Dro who just decides to reveal himself, and of course Sylvester, he comes up there, he decides to say, you know what, hey, enemy of my enemy, am I right? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, brother, go and run his pockets. And run the pockets they did. And then it essentially volume two all ends with a Dro essentially getting a Dro end up taking out before that, Cullen again out here wilding, like he going after a Dro just head first. Yeah. Like just fighting his heart and soul out, which again, he initially had that glow up, but now he trying to reach his vigilante Deku arc. he trying to go full dark Deku. And I'm just like, sir, no, just stop before you go too far. And yeah, it's like while he's fighting Johnny, our boy, like basically Cullen was like, hey, we need to leave this boy behind. Like he probably like left us, he probably is one of the Genu that we probably got. And Four is like, nah, he one of us. He invited to the cookout. He is valid. And then Johnny proves his validity by standing up to a Dro, by saving him, and by like basically knocking some sense into Cullen. Uh-huh. Only for a Dro to impale him.
Said welcome to the donut club.
Yep. He got sent packing. He got to meet Rengoku. He got to meet Ace.
He got to meet Obito.
He got to meet Ren. like legit, it was just nothing but nothing but just a giant hole, and he gone. And of course Ford, he just out of it at this point, because yeah, he lost his boy. He lost his servant. Oh man, I'm about to get flamed in the comments. I don't care. But yeah, so he is just beside himself, and of course, like again, that's when Sylvester, he decides to just know what, forget all this, screw you, Adro, screw your destiny, and then pushes him into the him through the portal, and essentially Adro and Sylvester are now back in purgatory.
Yeah, so if that, it does flash forward like 6 months, the family is kind of split up. We do find out that Charles Sangre, who is Cullen's dad, he's alive, even though he got left for dead. He ends up meeting with Dr. Sylvester. And then also during this time, Ma Eda establishes Blank as the leader of the Sangre family now. So with that, 6 months have passed. The portals all over the world are still opening, which I thought was really interesting, because when the comic first started, I thought it was going to be like, okay, it's an underground fight. Like, nobody's really supposed to know that these monsters exist and that this family fights them. But, like, it's essentially like the entire world gets infected by it. And it's like they're losing the fight, like, really bad, because they can't cure anybody, whether it be Genu or Nzombo. In Zondo. So it's just kind of like tough with that. And we see that Ford and Cullen, they have their own journey. Berg, he's kind of like established himself. He's starting a family with another in Zondo. And then just like Blank struggling with leadership. So that was definitely tough. But during this time, Uncle Enoch, he's like united with all the other families in kind of Harlem. And he's like, hey, we all have these different words for the same thing. So with science, with faith, with magic, it has to lead to one conclusion. So that's kind of like what he works on in this volume.
Yep, absolutely. And of course, unfortunately, due to all this, the families are, they still in the prideful bag. And it's like, nah, because all these problems is because of you Sangriers. You guys are all the, every time something pops off, it's always y'all at the center. Nah, we just gonna keep to ourselves. And at this point, like literally he's just still doing his best to try to convince the others to join them. And of course, we got like just everybody just doing their best to fight and to fight like all the history, like all the monsters, all the Nzondo Genu, and everything of the sort, if you want to take over.
Yeah, so we'll just wrap it up, because again, we can't really talk every complex. But one part that like really hurt me was like Uncle Enoch, he said he found the solution. So essentially the emotions that are happening in Mars Arc, or the Shadow Realm, if you will, were created by, shaped by the elder gods, or like the beings that used to live there. And it eventually, that hatred corrupted it because it was a peaceful place. So with that, he's like on the way to like the family dinner to tell them everything, and he gets killed right before he gets there, which was like a really sad scene. So like with that, we also find out that Cullen, the reason that he's so spiteful and so hateful ever since coming back, is that we learned that his hatred is for the Jinnu because they hold him back from being what he wants to be. So the Jinnu, essentially, like the fact that they exist and the fact that he's born into that family, he has to fight them. That's his role, but he wants to be anything else other than that, which is why his hatred is so building. And then in like the 14th book or comic, if you will, it's like a one shot for each character. And it was such an like incredible part. And like everyone's just like looking up for a solution. And it was really crazy, the ending. Like, it's super bittersweet where they fight, like they find essentially the cure, or like a winning solution, if you will. And they fight to cure like this tree, which is again turned by the emotion of hatred. And they end up curing it with hope and love, but it's only one tree. And in the process, they lose a family member, which turns another family member into an Nzandu. And it kind of like wraps up with essentially fast forwarding to the pre-World War II time. Mm-hmm. And one of the quotes that I wrote down that I thought was just like really, really cool was, "The poison in our souls that drives us to kill over race and religion is the same thing that's infected the planet and turned it against us. But we can't fight hate with more hate. We can't heal a diseased world by using the same disease that started the sickness. We have to find a different way." That was such an incredible quote during like that last chapter.
Yeah, like when I read that, I almost got choked up, because I'm like, bro, this statement right here, it is too true. It is true not just for back then, it's true even today, man. And that's part of the reason I just love this comic so much. This comic book series, and the fact that it's only 15 issues long, it's just like, bro, this is remarkably short.
Yeah, the thing, because like when it ended, I was like, wow, it only ended with him like taking out that one thing. So like they didn't like win-win. And just to like, at a certain point when I was reading it, I was like, this is bigger than just a comic. It's like it's talking to something else. So when I was reading it, I was like, I had to like have those glasses on. So with that, it was just kind of like, wow. But it does start with just one. Like, you can't cure it all in a day, which was that one hit.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. For sure. Any other themes that we pointed out and noticed?
I mean, just with tradition, that was definitely a big one. Just with like, we saw how Maeda essentially was like, "Hey, Blank, you need to be in charge, because like, Your cousins are wild and I'm not suitable to be a leader anymore. Your mom isn't like suited to be a leader because you're left, like you're the best option," which breaks from tradition. So we saw Blank deal with that leadership role and things like that. And even with Ford and how his character turned around, where he was Cullen to start with. And by the end, like when they saved that orphanage, essentially, that was kind of like impactful.
Yeah. And then, of course, like we're going to get into it a lot more, especially after this sponsor break that we're about to get into, just the topic of our history. So for today's sponsor, we have ourselves the Sangriere Academy of Love. See, in this time, we face just a bunch of different challenges. You can face Nzandu, created from your guilt and your fear. Or you can face Jinnu, created from our hatred and our bigotry. We're here at the Sangriere Institute. We are here to teach you all about love and therapy and prosperity. And of course, if those options don't work, we can always teach you how to fight with your hands and whatever you can get your hands into. So please come join this institute today, because we will definitely have to fight for a better future.
Cool. So with that, as Meech mentioned, we're going to kind of just get into history. And before we get into that, I do want to give a bit of a trigger warning. Like, this will be just a straight up conversation. I know we like to have fun, get into like nerdy topics, conversations, have a lot of like wild times. But with that, we're just going to get into like some, especially opening up some very serious topics. If you're with a kid and you're a parent, you might want to listen to it first. Before letting them listen to it, to decide that if you're a kid listening, well, we gave you the warning, so.
Welcome to Black History 101. So essentially, like, from this comic, like, as Demetrius alluded to earlier, was the Red Summer of 1919. Now, if you want to know like what that is, it's essentially just a period throughout basically 1919, which there were just a large amount of terrorist attacks, white supremacist movement, racial riots, just all throughout like just a bunch of different cities out in the United States. And essentially it was just mostly like white on black violence. Like there were like mostly the African Americans, like we mostly didn't fight back, but sometimes we did, and sometimes they were bloody. But yeah, it's just like one of a myriad of just black spots in history.
Yeah. And like with that, I did some research for it, and you can correct me since you're the historian, but with that, it said it was like across at least 26 cities. Like at least that were recorded, you have to take into account as 1919. Post-World War One, just like a lot of servicemen coming back, jobs taken, dealing with that, the Great Immigration, which is kind of just like a lot of blacks move from the South to the Midwest and the industrial North part of it.
Great migration.
Yes. So with that, it's just kind of like taking to account that you think you're leaving racism, but it's everywhere, which is what we'll get into a bit later as well. But I also appreciate that you said terrorism, because that's what it is. So just kind of with that, a few highlight lowlights, if we'll be being honest, but just mobs attacked and then a lot of turning of the blind eyes kind of what caused a lot. So there was a 4-day riot in DC. It was a similar Emmett Till-esque situation where a kid got accused of essentially flirting with a white woman and chaos ensued from there. Chicago around July 27th, it ended with 38 dead, 537 injured, and 1,000 black families left homeless. And then Elaine, Arkansas, September 30th through the 1st, essentially white cop was killed outside of a black union meeting. It was some kind of meeting like that. And the governor ordered stationed army soldiers nearby to put down a quote unquote insurrection, and it left almost 200 people dead.
And out of those 200, only 5 were white. Just saying. So yeah, those are just like some of those different things. And one of the things like I really want to stress is like this is something that I definitely was not privy to beforehand. Like this is something that wasn't talked about with me, and at least in my classes, until like way later. Like I knew about this next one that we're about to talk with, but this was the one that I didn't know about. I was like, but the sad part is I wasn't surprised.
Yeah. And just kind of with that, I literally had not heard of the Red Summer until last week when I read the comic, because they kept mentioning it. And in the context of the comic, because they kept blaming Uncle Enoch for it, I was like, oh, this is just an event in the comic. And then like at the end of the entire 15 episode run, they're like, hey, this is a real thing that happened. I was like, oh, snap. So I ended up doing research about it, and I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
So yeah. Getting into the next one.
All right, let's talk about the Tulsa, Oklahoma incident, or as I like to call it, the bombing of Black Wall Street. Essentially, like this is something that was actually touched upon in the show Watchmen on HBO, which I'm like, kudos for bringing that up. But essentially, If you guys didn't know, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, we had essentially a Black Wall Street. That's where like Black businesses, it was just a town where like Black people thrived. It was like Black people like just basically like just had it all. Like we were doing so well for ourselves. And then somebody just decided to say, wait, these Black people having a good time? Bomb it all. And though they, so people actually like they actually sent like bombers to come in and like basically destroy that entire town, like killing innumerable amount of the Black population, and as well as just like going through killing folks and just leveling that entire town.
Yeah, that was crazy. Like I don't know when you first heard of it, but I literally never heard of it until 2020. And then like with the George Floyd situation, and then it got brought up. And then, as you mentioned, it was in Watchmen. And then later it was in Lovecraft Country. And just also like, it just, that was like the one sticking point where it's like Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street. And I, like never hearing this before is like insane, just like with the different things. So that was definitely something where it was just like learning about it was like eye-opening in a sense.
Yeah. So like for me, I knew about this like because in college I actually studied like on Black history, and this was like the major event, like one of the major events that was that we actually discussed over. And like I can just remember that time when we were all just like reading about it, and just like, and the professor like lecturing about it, and you could cut the air with a knife. That's just how tense the entire atmosphere was, especially since it was like 99% Black students and maybe like 3 white students in that class, and it was a small class too. So like we just felt it, and that was like the first time I could tell, like I know I heard of it, and I could tell like that was the first time many others heard about it as well. So kudos to my African-American history professor for that at Texas A&M. And but really, like this was just one of those that was just like, dang, why were we not allowed to have nice things? And but it really just does like just give like just, hey, this is our history, this is how messed up it is, especially America. And it's crazy that nobody talked about it, and it didn't reach the cultural zeitgeist until that show comes out, which I'm just like, bro, it took Watchmen coming out for Tulsa, Oklahoma to address it. And it took them that long for history books to now start adding that piece of history back into history textbooks, which I'm just like, why did it take that long?
And to be honest with you, it really didn't like have the camera zoomed in on it until after the George Floyd situation where he was murdered.
Yeah, so I'm just like, yo, like no wonder we did not know about it until much later in life, because it wasn't focused on. To which I'm just like, this just proves just how jacked our American history is and just how much they have to hide, which makes me think like, what other incidents happened and we're not just going to talk about?
Yeah, so like with that, also like in the rundown, other like situations that you like recently heard of, didn't know before, or like I feel like at some point there's just too many to name, because most of the ones that I know are just like the 60s ones that happened during like the civil rights movement, and I feel like it only gets talked about because it happened during the period of the civil rights movement.
Yeah, definitely. And but yeah, like of course, like here's my thing, there's a reason that the civil rights movement had to happen in the first place, and the reason being is because of all these atrocities that happened beforehand. So it's like, what was the straw that broke the camel's back to make us like want to act and like make us like, hey, we need to fight for our rights? And like, heck, like the Tulsa, Oklahoma incident, for example, that's one. That's the Red Summer, that's definitely another. And as you mentioned, I could be here all day just talking about just the amount of atrocities that have happened, not just then, but now, that that makes us just that we just need to fight even more.
Yeah. So with that, I don't know, like it kind of ties into like our next actually big question, but like any anecdote that kind of opened your eyes to racism, because we can kind of touch on it with the first question of like school and how it handles it. Like in a sense, it kind of felt like with school, it was like racism is over and there are like remnants left, kind of like K through 12. It was like, here's like the racist period, civil rights movement happened. There was like kind of stuff. And then, you know, Barack Obama got elected president, racism ended.
Every time it was just like, yeah, no, right. Racism, it like even with like it ended before Obama.
They would at least do the 1992 LA riots and then it was over.
Yeah. Like just like, hey, these are just tiny sects of just insurrection. Like it was just a small part of the country, just a very tiny portion of our history. Is like, no, this is a major part of our history. This happened basically from the beginning of America being founded to now.
Mm-hmm.
To now. And like you talking about like more anecdotes to like, oh, like yeah, like some things like in school, right? You just, and I don't know about you, but like I went to like a predominantly black elementary school, like
same.
Of course.
Same.
So like it got talked about, but not to a severe degree because again,
elementary school, so yeah.
Elementary school. Middle school went to predominantly Hispanic. So we did not talk about it. We did not talk about that at all. And then once we got to high school, like I went to a mostly black high school, but my teachers were white. So,
and then you also have to think of curriculum that you have to prepare for the end of year tests that are standardized by the state.
Yeah, it's like, again, standardized tests by the state to where you just like, okay, like this is just like one tiny blip, like we can talk about it, but it's like, but even then I'm just like, nah, there was just not enough to talk about. And then of course it would take me going to college and actually seeking out African American history to actually get all the dark, well, get most of the dark details about it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm just like, we like as a society, like one of the things like we've always said is like, hey, history was written by the winners, and the fact that like it just was not talked about at all, that it just was like a blip in their eyes, really, really makes you think and call to question everything about your history now, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I really love how the comic puts like a focus on that of like, hey, this is the time period. Hey, let's focus on it. Like, let's keep mentioning. And an anecdote for me, one that like the one that opened my eyes is the Trayvon Martin when he got killed. That was tough because that was the first time where it's like, that's me, where I looked at the TV screen and I was like he would literally be the same age as us today. And yeah. That sticks with me. Oh crap, I'm getting emotional. But that like that really like just like. He could have had potential, or he could have like, you know, he could have been anything, but at the end of the day, he's still someone's friend, his someone's son, like brother, cousin, friend. And like, just with that, he had that taken away from him. And like, for you and me, it's like, that could have been us. Like we probably rocked hoodies in high school, and you know, and it's just like the situation where it seems so like cut and dry to me, where it's just like, you got told not to like follow this kid. And he defended himself and you still went free. And then just like the different situations that happened after that with like the Michael Brown still being the same age as us, like and then Ahmaud Arbery, that one stuck with me too because he was a runner. And like with that, it was just like he was running, minding his business. And I remember like in college, one of my goals during a summer was to like run the distance of essentially a half marathon. And I was in Southwest Virginia, like in the mountains running. And like, it took me a lot of different weird places. And like, I never thought that I was in danger at any point, but like with that happening, like to him, it's just like, wow, that could have been me as well. So that's like what opened my eyes to it. Whereas it's like, oh, maybe it's not race, but it is racial. So that's kind of just like where you lose the scales of innocence upon your eyes.
Yeah. And going along with that, like for me, it actually was Rodney King.
Mm.
Like it was actually that, because like, sure, I wasn't alive during that moment, but all my family was. And the fact like it was so recent at that point in time, like that was just something that they always just like basically like slowly but sure, like inserting it into my life, like, hey, this is just something that can happen to you. And it's why we tell you, like, hey, be home by like a certain time. Like, hey, don't like be caught out in a shady neighborhood. Don't be out here looking shady. Cause like it just takes one person on the right day, on the right second, to take your life away. I'm just like, yeah, that's kind of like where it began. But as you mentioned, it was Trayvon Martin that kind of set it off for the rest of us. And set it off for the rest of our lives. And then at this point, it's like just seeing more and more in the news is just like, yeah.
Yeah. And it makes you think before phone cameras and everything. So we can get into the next question.
All right. So our next question is like, hey, why is the media now covering this part of history when schools didn't? Like, why did it take a TV show and somebody directing it to remind us of that history, when it really like why did the school system kind of fail us in that way?
Again, well, 2020 changed everything. I believe that's when the show came out, or that's at least when I watched it. That's what I remember. So Watchmen, just like pointing that out, George Floyd situation where he got murdered, that like in 2020 with COVID and the pandemic, we had to sit for the first time with a lot of our thoughts and things like that. And so social justice can be trendy. You saw like a lot of different companies where they're like, oh, we stand with this, we support this. People on social media posting about their experiences, different companies changing, and people changing their avatars or profile pics to just like a black square or black circle and things like that, where it's like, okay, let's bring it up. Let's take down the monuments. Let's do all this stuff. And you see now that some places, you know what state you are, panhandle, where it's kind of just like, they like how you mentioned with the schools, where it's like, nope, we not talking about any of this. So that's kind of just like the failing part of it, as you mentioned. I don't know, because like with schools and stuff, like, how many times have we talked about the Boston Massacre? Like, we can, like, numerous times, the Boston Tea Party, like, so many different battles that happened in American history. But the thing that sucks, and why, like, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and, like, Red Summer sucks so much, it's not just the tragedy that happened. It's the fact that we don't know about Black Wall Street. Mm-hmm. That's erased from history. Like, we don't know like what went into that, the business models, like how, like, generational wealth, as they say, getting passed down, like that's a part of our history that's deleted, not just the tragedy. And like so many people can have that part of history in their lives where it's like, we can take the lessons from this and move it forward. We can't take the lesson. We can just take the pain and the trauma. And the pain and the trauma was hidden. So now it's like dealing with that all over again. Like, we're Muzan's demons, where like we have that generational trauma.
Oh no, not the Muzan, not Muzan Jackson. But yeah, that is like a really deep, deep, fascinating point. I think like just when it comes to that, I think like when it comes to like them just basically redacting it from our history books, redacting it from everything, people may, like, there are two lines of thinking. Either one, deeply ashamed of it, which I think like is part of it. Two, as another system of just like trying to oppress us, like essentially like, hey, let's just downplay this part of their history, especially from a period where it seemed like they were gonna do so well. Let's just erase that. They don't need to know about that. Or C, like, they think like that part just was not relevant to the topic, because as you mentioned, like, hey, we live in a place where, like, when it comes to our learning, at least in terms of like our, you know, like elementary, middle, and high school, all of it's mostly like test oriented teaching.
Yes. Yes.
And just how like like they really just want to make sure we're able to like retain enough information to pass these tests and then boom, be done. And then boom, whatever happens, happens with you after that. You can learn all about that in college. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the college courses, like, hey, you actually have to go out and find those courses. Like, if you want it to be in that realm, in that sphere, like, you have to seek it out. And sometimes you may actually have to, like, those courses may be locked to where you have to have a specific major in order to view it. Like, I was fortunate I was able to take that African-American history class because I was in that field.
Right.
So I had that access. I had that information. But for just a regular common folk, like, let's say somebody in engineering, if you will, like, they want to learn about it. They literally just have two options. Three, find a friend who's taking the course. Two, go read about it go do your research and read about it in libraries or the internet. Or I guess now TV shows and comics. So,
and you got to think about their workload. So,
yeah. So it's just unrealistic for just somebody who's not in that particular field to study all that out. And I'm just like, why not just make it part of the regular curriculum?
And like, you made an excellent point where, like, it could be guilt or stuff like that. And I know, like, a lot of people, some people today shouldn't be essentially blamed for what happened in 1860. But, like, at least understanding, like, what happened in place is helpful. It's, like, it's not blaming. It's just education. And, like, with that, people can sometimes say times were different there. You have to understand the times. I get that, because things that, like, even we said, like, 10 years ago, like, if we said it today, you about to get up out of here. But, like, with that, you can make the distinction between, oh, you said something that at the time was funny, but today is insensitive and hurts people's feelings. And the difference between, oh, no, you just murdered people, dragged them out of their homes and burned their homes down. Like, there is a distinct difference between that. And just, like, even with that, like, how many times in elementary school, at least, that we were told about Christopher Columbus? He didn't even discover America. Like, that's the thing. And it's not like he made a mistake in terms of what's the, like, the cure? It's like someone, like, they were trying to do something with science and they ended up finding not a cure, but it's like bacteria and stuff like that.
Oh,
penicillin.
Penicillin.
It's not like he made a mistake where it's like, oh, he found penicillin. It's just like, he didn't find America. He gets credited for it. And then we find out that he was a scumbag and he has his own day for it. Like, that's insane. Like, Andrew Jackson is a terrible human being. He's on the $20 bills. And, like, with that, like, think of the indigenous people. Like we had it bad. Like, their people and their cultures got erased from history. Like, that's just, like, terrible. Like, and not being able to learn about that is really tough.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's like, and with that, like we can touch about, like, how we were taught this a bit. I know, like, for me, as I said, mentioned earlier, like, it was really all college where I had to learn about all this. And in fact, like, what actually gets covered, like, from elementary through high school, like, okay, because I went to predominantly Black elementary, Black high school, and then Hispanic middle school, it was mostly like, all right, civil rights. It's like, all right, America founding, got some slavery, you got the Civil War, slavery over, woo! But it's like, oh, wait, there's some racism.
A little bit.
Oh, hey, there's some racism here. Oh, whoa, 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 hold on. Some things are happening. Oh, wait, but unfortunately, we can't focus on that right now because we got World War One, World War Two. We got ourselves the Red Scare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got ourselves the Red Scare. We got ourselves the Cold War. We can't focus on just, oh, and now, after all that nonsense, now we can focus on civil rights. Now we can, like, talk about, hey, let's talk about Rosa Parks. Let's go ahead and talk about MLK getting shot for the millionth time. Let's talk about I Have a Dream. Let's talk about, no, we really didn't talk about Malcolm X too much. No.
We didn't
talk about Malcolm X much, if at all. As you can see, like, all right, civil rights movement. After MLK gets killed, now we, and then boom. All right, everybody got their act together. All right, there's no more racism. Oh, there's that like one tiny incident. Oh, and there's that other incident. And then there's that other incident. But hey, we got Obama, right?
Yeah, so yeah, it's like that. But I think we both agree, like, the story should be told. I mean, it doesn't have to be like the entire curriculum, but it is a part of American history. As we, so transitioning from there, we can get into the toxic cycle of hatred and fear.
Yeah. So when it comes to that, like when it comes like with this comic, right, it really highlights just how much hatred can just seep out into each and every person, how each and every one of us, like, we have that potential to like be overcome by that hate, but it's through that hatred, it's through that fear that you turn into a monster. You know, I'm the Star Wars guy, so you know what I'm about to say. Fear is a path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. And that's exactly what this comic basically details, is just how much these characters like all suffered, all because of the hatred of a bunch of people, a bunch of like elder gods, a bunch of demons. Just all their hate and everything just pretty much ends up like causing untold carnage, untold just deaths and everything like that. If you want to touch on it a bit more.
Yeah, so I just think of Pain and like how he talks about in Naruto and how he talks about the cycle of hatred, where it's literally like, hey, you want to get back at me? I'll get back at you. And then once I get back at you, then your children want to get back at me, and then my children want to get back at your children. And it's just, it keeps going. And I'm not going to spoil beef for people that are watching, but at the end of the day, it's just mutual destruction. It's literally just like poisonous, because the thing with fear and hatred, like at first you can kind of be, you can recognize that like, oh, something is wrong within myself. But then at a certain point, you're just like overcome with it, and you're like, yo, I'll make excuses for why I have this, why like I'll do these evil acts, why I have such hatred in my heart. And then at a certain point where it's so poisonous, it's like you just don't care. You just do it because you want to. And honestly, it can feel good at times. And that's like the scary part of how it's so toxic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because of the fact like, hey, when somebody slights you, what's like your first gut reaction? Getting even. And mm-hmm. like, and in that moment, in those few seconds, like when you want to take revenge, like that's when your prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that governs like decision making, shuts down, and you're being ruled by the amygdala, which is the emotion centered part. And being ruled by the emotion centered part of your brain is not a good thing, right? Because essentially, like if you're ruled by your emotions, you're gonna like make decisions based on those emotions. And if those emotions is stuff like anger or hatred, and you want to get even, you're not thinking like in the long term what would happen. You're just thinking in the short term of getting even. And say you do get even and you feel great about it. It's like, now that we got that done, and then boom, and then you don't realize the consequences later. I think that's a certain reason why like road rage happens so much, yeah. Especially in today's age where road rage is becoming ever so common. In fact, I saw on the news yesterday at the time of this recording that like one person died because from an apparent road rage incident, and there's no clue on like who did it. So yeah, I think like at the end of the day, like when it comes to that, like we just have. There's no use. Like you can be angry. Like that is something I'm always gonna advocate. Like, hey, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to feel feelings, because that it's there. Like we have those feelings, we have those desires. So like, hey, it's there for a reason.
Yeah.
It's just what you do with it that determines whether that emotion is good or bad.
100% agree. I was gonna say something similar. So like definitely with that, yeah, I just like take a break, pause sometimes. I really think that people, again, with certain shows that we've seen, like people make fun of Talk No Jutsu like a lot with Naruto. But at the end of the day, especially in Shippuden, he's able to recognize that you're a person that went through a lot of trauma as well, because like the Great Ninja Wars and stuff like that, where it's just like you feel the same pain that I do at different points and different times. So like really just like we're the same with different backgrounds, of course, and different like ideologies, but we're human at the end of the day. So like there's really no point to take it to the point that a lot of people go at times.
Agreed. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. Anything else?
I mean, just how fantastic this comic is. Like the fact that we're able to take such a time to talk about such a deep-rooted topic and be able to just, hey, look at this. This is all like the great things that we have. Like it makes us really reflect on our history. I'm like, there you go. Let's do this.
Yeah, I 100% recommend this comic if you have the time. It's really good. And they also said that they are going to do some more. And this is only one part of an entire story. So definitely Bitterroot, check it out.
Yep. All right. And thank you all for just a wonderful just discussion on just our Black history and just the comic that is Bitterroot. But now comes a very special time in a special segment in our podcast today. It's known as Come Get Your Rose. And for this one, I'm handing it out to a bunch. Well, it's mainly to two people, but really it goes to the entire team. It goes to David F. Walker and Chuck Brown, the co-creators of Bitterroot. Man. We just did a whole podcast about how great this comic is, man. And just the fact that it's a very, very Eisner winning comic, because it talks about the real life while sprinkling some fantasy as well. It's deep. It's very rooted, if you will, in our past, and it definitely gives like many different spotlights for our future. To both of y'all, just thank you for creating such an amazing series, and just how with a stellar cast of characters, and to the artists and the inkers and the colorists who are able to bring that to life so that we may be able to see it. You guys get y'all roses too, but I definitely just want to highlight to these two brothers who were able to create something for our generation. And this is something I'm definitely passing down to like my kids. If I should have them, I'm definitely passing these down to them to like, just let them know like, hey, this is a comic that's deeply affected by our history, and definitely like is a way to like get them to talk about these topics. And if in the event that somehow our history professors failed us and they don't want to talk about it, we got like 15 issues of a comic that definitely will do that. So I just wanted to give that to them if you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, just with that, just to keep it quick, the fact that I was reading it as a comic at first, and then halfway through it was just like a bigger context and like emotions that were outside of the comic and kind of how it related. And the fact that we were able, like you and I were able to have this discussion, is absolutely incredible writing, absolutely incredible storytelling. The ending to it was bittersweet just because of, you know, what happened, but definitely 10 out of 10 recommend. And we look forward to whatever TV series comes out of it or movie project. So yeah. With that, do you have any other recommendations that we can get into now?
Yes. Let's go ahead and get into the recommendations. So I have a bunch of just out there comics created by Black creators, because I feel like they're able to give us just a different purview into our lives and everything like that. And this main one is actually something I'm reading now. It's called Killadelphia by Rodney Barnes. Is essentially about vampires in Philadelphia, and it's about this man and his father, and of course they Black. So that's number one. Another one I definitely want to highlight is Firebug by Johnny Christmas. It's another Image created comic, and it's just another just a great fun time. And it's definitely something you can definitely read on like in Black History Month. You have The Warning by Edward LaRocque. That one's an alien invasion type story, and it's, and of course, as I said, like all these are written by Black creators. So just go ahead and do that with what you will. And then like just transition just a little bit, just two comics I want to highlight. First one, Ta-Nehisi Coates' run on Black Panther for Marvel. Stellar, just stellar stuff. This is the Donny Cates run for Black Panther.
Ooh, okay.
Yes, you know.
Okay.
I do not say that often.
When you say that, I got to check it out now.
But yes, Ta-Nehisi Coates just brung it. He brought heat with Black Panther that I have not seen since and before. And then finally, N.K. Jemisin, I'm sorry I mispronounced your name, but she is the creator of the Joe Mullen Far Sector Green Lantern, Black Sister Green Lantern. I know there's a million Green Lanterns out there.
I'm Master Joiner.
Yep. I know about John Stewart. I know, but she brings that sass. She brings that black queen energy that we all know and love. So just go ahead, take this from me before I start talking more.
And for two quick ones, just bigger ones, in preparation of Across the Spider-Verse, we have Cody Ziegler and his Miles Morales run of Spider-Man, which Meech has been telling me repeatedly is goated on another level. So that's definitely one you can check out if you want to prepare for the movie or if you just enjoy comics. And one other one, Nicholas Draper Ivy, his run on Static has been really good on just that interpretation of Static, the whole Static Shock kind of universe. So check that out if you want to as well, because that's definitely a superhero, as a Black superhero, that kind of got you and me into that sphere. So I remember watching that on WB TV Saturdays and every other day. So going from there, yeah, I guess we can get into our plugs.
Oh, wait, before we get into our plugs, this is news that came out recently and we have to talk about it. Since we're talking about Black creators, and we're talking about just Black excellence, Jonathan Majors, he is free. Our boy beat the allegations. They were false to begin with. I'm going to need everybody who doubted my mans to apologize. I'm going to need everybody who doubted us to come give us our cheddar. Give me my check. Where my money at? Because I told you this man, he too good for that. I told you we wait until more details release. You thought I was a madman. You thought hope was forever gone. You thought I was no longer be able to simp for this man. But nah, he beat the allegations. Damien is here. Big Dame is here. Young Kane the Conqueror is here. And y'all want to get on me about Ezra Miller? Nah, get out of here. Nah. Run me my check. All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and get to these plugs. We have ourselves our Instagram and our Twitter, BlurCity22. Come give us a like, come give us a follow. And we have ourselves our YouTube and our Patreon at BlurCityPod. Please, if you want to get access to very exclusive content, exclusive episodes, hey, come get some and give some cheddar to your boys. Boom. Got yourself a Patreon to go ahead and give yourself something to play with. We have ourselves our Discord linked in our Instagram page. Then we have ourselves our email at blurredcity22@gmail.com. And this is where you can submit suggestions for our future content. This is where, if you want to collab, you reach out to us through there or to any of our social media pages. And finally, we have ourselves, and by ourselves, I mean me, I have my personal TikTok, which is the Rogue Jack 21. We don't know how long TikTok is going to stay. It ain't looking good for the platform, but hey, it is what it is. I was good with it. I was good without it, but boom. But and then also we have ourselves the Ravens of Everkeep podcast, which is a talk about Vanish that I'm part of on YouTube. So look up the Ravens of Everkeep. So that's all I have. What you got?
For our Patreon, we're going to aim in the months of June, July, moving forward to kind of get like one, maybe two episodes up a month. We just can't do it in May. We are at the end of our ropes right now. But for my individual author pages, you can catch me on my Instagram at Mitri_dash. That is Mitri_dash. And my Twitter at TheMad-16. If you're interested in my book, Phantom Pains, A Most Irregular Tale, you can catch that on Amazon. And people, the streets have been asking me repeatedly. I just finished my draft of the sequel. It is trying to come by the end of the year. I promise. Please stop harassing me about it. So with that, we can get into our words of encouragement.
All right. So for my words of encouragement is that embrace love. Embrace love and not hatred. Because if you embrace like your fear, you embrace your hatred, or if you're just run by guilt and all of those negative emotions, then you're not exactly living life full to the fullest. And if you want to truly get everything out of life, and if you want to ensure you have a peaceful life, embrace love for one another, because that's the only way that we can get through life.
Yeah. And just what I have to say, hate can't overcome itself. Fear can be overcome. So with that, choose love, as my dear brother said, one heart at a time. That's all we can change sometimes. So with that, it's not goodbye forever. It's just goodbye for now. And that's the Blurred City Podcast.
See ya later.